Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Ask not.
The Beatles.
Circus is on the air.
The president does it.
Sometimes you feel like a...
That means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Johnny.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Ah! We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. Win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
Mr. Dave Schwann, good morning to you.
I guess this microphone is... Oh, yes.
Yes, it is. You are live.
All right. Good morning, Dave.
How's it going, buddy?
Good. And a happy pre-New Year to you.
Same here. Same here. I know it's the first New Year's we're not working together in like 5 years.
Something like that.
Yeah. New Year's Day we usually
New Year's
get.
Day, yeah.
My kids this
That's
year...
That's right. New Year's Day.
New Year's Day. Yeah, right. Yeah. The kids have said to me... and last year we stayed down in the city. I can't remember where we stayed. Maybe at the Gwynn. So a little bit across the street from. No, it was the Intercontinental.
And that's next door.
Next door.
It was next door to Tripp Tower.
That's right. Yeah. And at 10 o'clock, we got a room with a bedroom and a living room so that I could get some sleep before the show. But at 10 o'clock at night, I'm telling everyone to be quiet, and I'm getting angry. Quiet! I'm trying to sleep. They're like, Dad, this isn't fun. this isn't fun for New Year's. You know, we want to stay up till midnight, and so yeah. So
and then you're getting more and more upset and not being able to
yeah,
go to sleep.
Yeah. So this year we're going to enjoy.
I know
it.
How that goes. Yes.
We're gonna. What's funny is my sister's in from out of town, so she's staying at our house, but we're going to go on a little staycation and stay down in the city.
Oh, okay.
So they get the house to themselves, and they're going to have some people over at our house, and then we're going to go stay in the city.
Okay.
Yeah. So
well, that works out then.
I think so.
And then you're not in New Year's morning. I think it's Pete.
It is Pete McMurray.
I think it is Pete. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pete's a good guy. Mm-hmm. I love Pete.
Yep.
Speaking of New Year's, and I know this sounds kind of funny, but we were talking about, like, what's the history of New Year's? There is a history of New Year's, like, because there has to be a time that was established that this was the beginning of a new year.
That is correct.
In 45 BC, I don't know if you remember this, Dave, but New Year's quite. Day, celebrated on January 1st for the first time in history as the Julian calendar took effect. Soon after becoming Roman, the Roman dictator Julius Caesar decided that the traditional Roman calendar was in dire need of reform. Introduced around the 7th century BC, the Roman calendar attempted to follow the lunar cycle, but frequently fell out of phase with the seasons and had to be corrected. But the celebration of New Year's Day in January fell out of practice in the Middle Ages. Even those who adhere to the Julian calendar, and the latter reason is because they failed to calculate the exact days in a solar year, so they just kept shifting it off a little bit. But they still established what the first day of a new year would be during Julius Caesar's time.
Yeah, that's right.
We have a clip. No, we don't.
Julius Caesar gave himself one of the longest months of the year, which is why we have July.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Wow. Listen to you.
And
I love
August,
this guy.
Caesar, Augustus. Those
yep.
are the
yep.
reasons. One yep. of the reasons why
the reasons,
those
yeah.
are among. We have other, you know, calendar months that are 31 days, but there they are
yeah.
in the middle of summer.
He gave himself the longest ones. There you go. There you go. 1903. And this one is pretty tragic in the city of Chicago. It was the Iroquois Theater fire that
oh,
took place.
Yes. Yes. I often walk past those buildings that are there now.
It's the Oriental, right? Now, yeah. is it the Oriental?
Very close to the Oriental. Yes.
More than 600 people
yeah.
died in this in 1903. The deadliest theater fire in U.S. history blocked fire exits and the lack of a fire safety plan caused most of the deaths. At the time,
locked let me see. Doors that they were unable to get out.
Yeah, it was a matinee performance today. It was actually today, 115 years ago. 27 of the theater exits were locked. In addition, stage manager Bill Carlton went out front to watch the show with 2,000 patrons while the other stagehands left the theater and went out for a drink. And it was the spotlight operator who first noticed that there was a light that sparked a fire backstage. They scattered. An asbestos curtain was to be lowered that would confine the fire, but it wouldn't come down fully. A panic began. People just stomped over each other. Yeah. And I believe they used the Marshall Fields as the morgue.
Oh.
On the eighth floor, right above the Walnut Room.
Okay.
Because people always talk about, and the people who do Haunted Chicago always talk about that floor being haunted and feeling very cold and feeling breezes come through.
Yeah.
Because that was where
what it happened. What was Harpo Studios was a temporary morgue for the Eastland.
For the Eastland disaster,
and I read in a book on the Eastland that Oprah would not be in there at very, very late at night or in the early morning hours because there were voices being heard. There were, various odors. Yeah. In that area there?
Haunted. Oh, no, I knew that place was haunted for a long time,
Roger's looking at us like,
he's scared. He's scared right now. 1932, at the height of the Great Depression, thousands turned out for the opening of Radio City Music Hall, the Art Deco Theater in New York City. Radio City Music Hall was designed as a palace for people, a place of beauty where ordinary people could see high-quality entertainment. And there was radio shows that came out of there, and Broadway, of course, the Rockettes.
All kinds of them, yeah.
Here's a little clip of a newsreel from that time that talks about the building of the theater.
The world's biggest motion picture theater. The music hall where 150,000 people a week watch Rockefeller Dancing Girls.
It was opening day for the Radio City Music Hall, part of the new Rockefeller Center, personally financed by John D. Rockefeller, Jr. during the Great Depression. Under the guiding hand of impresario Samuel Roxy Rockefeller, the Radio City Music Hall was launched as a theater like no other. It's an Art Deco gem, with nearly 6,000 seats facing a huge proscenium arch that resembles a setting sun. Murals and statues and other artworks grace the grand foyer and lounges. All in all, the perfect setting for the annual Christmas Spectacular, which the Rockettes helped to kick off in 1933.
So there you go. So that was the great Charles Osgood from CBS Sunday Morning that kind of shared that moment.
And you drive by that building.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
And it's just
legendary. Absolutely. Yeah. I've been there. We've seen the Rockettes there a couple times.
But when we were in New York in May, we went by it in a cab, and it was just awesome.
First event I ever went to was my first red carpet event, and it was for the MTV Music Awards in 1993. And I sat in front of Madonna, two rows behind Howard Stern. Aerosmith was sitting next to me.
Wow.
It was the craziest thing.
This is at Radio City Music Hall.
The MTV Music Awards were there, at the time. And that's where Michael Jackson kissed Priscilla Presley on stage. That was the opening of the show when they were married or whatever. But but it was one of those things where you're standing in the hall or in the aisle just waiting to take your seat, talking to the most incredible people in the music industry.
Some of the most popular people.
Oh my
God.
I think I met Roseanne. Roseanne was there. Barr was there too. But just the musicians alone. David Bowie. I mean, it was crazy.
David Bowie.
Yeah.
Bowie.
1938, FDR, an adult victim of polio, founded the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, which was later renamed the March of Dimes Foundation.
Correct.
So he was the guy that founded all of that.
Apparently, is still around.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely. 1944, as World War II dragged on, President. President FDR ordered his Secretary of War to seize properties belonging to Montgomery Ward because the company refused to comply with the labor agreement. I remember when I worked for Montgomery Ward years ago, and corporately, there were pictures of the president of Montgomery Ward, I think it was Sewell at the time, they were carrying him out in his chair.
Is that right?
Yeah, out of the building because they were going to arrest him. And he refused to leave his office, so they picked him out of this beautiful chair and took him out. In an effort to avert strikes and critical war support, Roosevelt created the National War Labor Board in 1942. The board negotiated settlements between management and workers to avoid shutdowns in production that might cripple the war effort. During the war, the well-known retailer and manufacturer, Ward, had supplied the Allies with everything from tractors to auto parts to workmen's clothing, items deemed important to the war effort as bullets and ships. However, Montgomery Ward, Sewell Avery, refused to comply with the terms of three different collective bargaining agreements. And after he refused on the second order, Roosevelt called an Army National Guard to seize the company's main plant in Chicago, and Sewell himself had to be carried out of his office by the National Guard.
I guess they were still headquartered on the building in Michigan Avenue here, and then they had the
They were 1929 is when they moved into the Chicago River buildings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So that
building that was the Montgomery Ward headquarters was already
sold to somebody else. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Okay. 1952. Just the facts, ma'am. On this day, Sergeant Joe Friday's famous catchphrase, and it was a radio show for a little bit. Dragnet was
right,
but it was mostly a TV show, popular radio
Jack
series.
Webb did Joe Friday twice?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And then when the hit radio series moved to NBC. Webb and the actor who played Friday's partner, Barton Yarborough, moved in with it. Although Yarborough died of a heart attack shortly after the pilot, and he was replaced by a series of actors over the time, including Harry Morgan,
right,
who was
in the 1960s version of Dragnet.
It was always in the top 10 through 1956. Here's the opening because it's classic.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
This is the city. From one night to the next, it's never the same. They make it that way. Counting the suburbs, there's 4 million of them. Most of the people have something to add. A few of them are out to take it away. In my job, they're the ones who keep you on the move. I'm a cop. It was Wednesday, September 28th. We were working the night watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Ed Jacobs. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. It was 11:48 p.m. when I got back from the crime lab. The call came in a few hours before. An attractive blonde secretary was found beaten to death in a downtown office building. A length of steel pipe wrapped in heavy paper was on the floor beside her. There was no trace of the killer, no apparent motive for the killing. For every murder, there's at least one of each. We had to find them.
Now, if I ever see this on MeTV, I'd get hooked.
Sure.
Because it's 30 minutes. I mean, it's a short show.
Right.
But they're great.
Oh, yeah.
They're like The Fugitive. I
have
that show
memories
too.
Also, Dave, of when it was on prime time 50 years ago in the 60s.
Yeah, because it came back. It came back at some point. Like, it went off the air, and then it came back on the air.
Mid to late 1960s, color episodes with Jack Webb and Harry Morgan.
And Harry Morgan, yeah.
I'm thinking 1968,
yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
1962 Match Game debuted on NBC with host Gene Rayburn. Now, there was a couple versions of Match Game over time. The first one on NBC was nothing like the one we grew up with in the 70s. And, of course, there's a new one with Alec Baldwin that's pretty dirty. Like, if you're watching it, it's not like pretty late at night. Like, the things that people say on that show, I can't believe, because it's not in the family hour. It's at 9 o'clock at night. It's pretty funny because they recreated the whole set from the 70s and so forth. But here's the original 1962 opening. Take a listen.
From New York City, NBC TV presents The Match Game.
Johnny Olson, very young.
This portion brought to you today by the makers of new decongestant bromoquinine, the medication that gives you fast, effective, big relief for big cold miseries. And now here's your host, Gene Rayburn.
We thank you and we welcome you to the Match Game, a game of judgment played by two teams headed by a celebrity guest.
So that was a pilot, but this is, of course, the famous theme and the show that I will still watch when I see it on like the Buzzer Channel or the Game Show Network. Here's the one that we grew up with in the 70s.
Get ready to match the stars from the Love Boat, Bernie Capel, Brett Summers, Charles Nelson Reilly, Barnaby Jones, Lee Merriweather, Richard Dawson, and Betty White as we play the star-studded Big Money Match Game 78. And now, here's the star of Match Game 78.
Took the popularity of this series to a whole new level. And what I love again about this new iteration 40 years later with Alec Baldwin is they recreated the set, the orange carpeting, the shag carpeting, and they use the same theme.
Yeah.
It's fun.
From the 70s version.
From the 70s version.
Because I remember the other one, the first one you played with Gene Ritter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The joke was always Dumb Dora. Let's take a listen.
Dumb Dora is really dumb.
How dumb is she?
She's been in kindergarten so long, she's the only girl in class with blank.
It was a little dirty, too, but in the 3:30 in the afternoon.
That's about as risque as they got back then.
But they did. Like, I don't know if you could do that today at 3:30 in the afternoon. Of course, if you watch Maury or some of that other garbage, maybe you can. Maybe I'm totally wrong on that one. 1971, The Sonny and Cher Show began airing on CBS. It ran for 4.5 years. In between there, there was a year that they got divorced. And there was the Sonny Bono Review on ABC and the Cher Show on CBS.
Right, yeah.
And then they came back divorced, which was, I remember, as a kid. And I was like, I don't know.
It just didn't work at all.
I was 8 years old and I went, ugh. Like, you could tell the chemistry just was just
not there.
Oh, it was just odd.
Yeah. And she was just honored at the Kennedy Center.
Yes, she was.
She was a Kennedy Center honoree this year.
And she's got, of course, that new Broadway show, the
Cher
Show.
Yes.
That's out there as well. Now, years later, 1998, Sonny Bono became a congressman, wasn't he?
Yes, he was in Congress.
Congress. He was in 1998 at this time. His life was cut tragically short. He was killed in that skiing accident.
Yeah,
he hit a
tree.
He hit a tree and was immediately done. Yeah. He was 62 years old. The variety show was on for 20 years before they even started. I mean, it started in the 1950s. Like the themes of variety shows and Jackie Gleason and Carol Burnett and so forth, but they kind of made it a little more contemporary. It was a lot of more pop music, and their musical guests were a lot, hotter for the music of the day.
Yeah.
Way more contemporary. But it was always a funny, funny show. They would always grab their daughter, Chastity, to come on at the end of the show.
I think they did little skits.
They did. She always looked like she did not want to be there. She looked like Alex on Christmas Eve when he was sitting in here. Like, had no intention, like, why am I here? And she'd be looking out the audience like, what is going on? But at the end of the show, they always closed it with I Got You, Babe, which was their signature song.
Big hit.
Let's take a listen.
We'd like to thank our special guest, Mr. Ken Berry. Yeah. Come on.
Let's hear it for Ken Berry, Dave.
He just passed.
He just died.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have another special guest with us tonight. We have the president of our fan club. Our daughter's here tonight.
Come on, Pat. You want to
say it's a lot of clapping. Sorry, I should have cut that out, but...
Baby, I got you. Babe. I got
Just a different version of the song, but they did it at the end of every show. That's how they closed it up.
Yeah, that's this one and another one called Baby Don't Go.
Yeah, that was their first
another
hit.
Big hit.
That was their, that was their first hit.
Yeah.
But again, when they reunited after they were divorced for that show and they sang that each other, they looked at each other so like with a smile that was like just stapled into their face. Mm-hmm. Like it was just very unusual. Last thing I had
and
on my
when
list.
Everybody knew that they were no longer together.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was public. All public. 11 years ago, John Boehner handed the Speaker of the House gavel over to Nancy Pelosi, a Democratic representative from California, the first woman to hold the Speaker of the House position and the first woman to ever get that close to the presidency.
Yeah, right.
Ever. Speaker really in the history House. Of in the history of politics, yeah.
Kind of second in line there.
Yeah, it is.
After
That's right.
The vice president.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Which is going to happen again.
January 3rd.
January 3rd.